how's it going, eh? I'm Lee McCormick. This is Tramps Like Us, the Bruce Springsteen podcast, episode 58, Teaching English Literature with Bruce Springsteen. I'm pleased to bring you a great conversation I recently had with a new friend and fan of the show, Timothy Drake. Tim is a professor of English literature in Saskatchewan who told me how he is involved in music as Springsteen as part of his course, teaching students at the University of Saskatchewan and the First Nations University of Canada. We discussed Springsteen's songwriting as English literature and Tim's fandom of The Boss. I sincerely appreciate Tim for taking some time to talk with me, and I sincerely appreciate you for downloading the episode and listening via the website trampslikeuspod.com or via iTunes, where you can subscribe, rate the show, and leave a review. So it's my pleasure to talk to Timothy Drake, professor of English literature, and Tim reached out to me saying he was a listener of the show, and I decided to talk to Tim. So how are you doing tonight, Tim?
Doing really well, Lee. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, you reached out to me, you sent an email to the show, and said you're a listener of the show, and you know, you're working, you're a teacher, professor of English literature. Where are you located there, Tim?
I'm phoning you tonight from Prince Albert, Saskatchewan. I do teaching currently at both the University of Saskatchewan and First Nations University of Canada.
Cool.
And I've taught Bruce in classes in both of those universities.
Excellent. Yeah, and that's one of the things you mentioned is how you've used Springsteen and his music kind of to enhance your teaching and stuff like that, right? So I'm really curious to get in depth with you on that. But before we do that, let's just kind of get a background on you. Where did you become a Springsteen fan? Like, what was your entry point? When did you become a fan?
Well, I guess like so many, it was born in the USA.
Yep, same here.
1984.
Yep.
And I think I was about 8 years old, 8 or 9 years old when it came out. And it was the Dancing in the Dark video. You know, videos were so hot in the mid-80s.
Right.
Every kid had to watch MTV and here in Canada, Much Music.
Right.
And so I saw Dancing in the Dark. And then it's interesting, wrestling was so big in the mid-80s. And I was very much a fan of wrestling. There was a tag team. I don't know if you remember them, Barry Windham and Mike Rotundo.
Oh, yeah, the USA Express. Absolutely.
There we go. Yeah, the US Express. And they came to the ring with Born in the USA.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mike Rotundo, Barry Windham, gentlemen, come on in if you would, please. Mike, one-on-one against the former World Wrestling Federation heavyweight champ, the Iron Sheik.
You know, the Iron Sheik is from Iran. And right here, you're looking at a boy born in the USA. This is my chance to show the people in Boston what the Americas has left in it. I've trained all my life at Syracuse University, then I turned professional. Iron Sheik, I know you've trained all your life, but I'm going to show you what a boy born right here on the streets of Boston, on the streets of New York, in Chicago, it doesn't matter where you're from. You're born in the USA, and I'm going to show you what it's all about, U.S. style.
All right, speaking of the USA, you're going to be representing our fair country, Barry Windham, your opponent from Russia, Nikolai Volkov.
Gene, you know what happened here? Now, we showed these two boys exactly what we could do in a tag team situation, and they both took off out of the ring and didn't want to come back. So what we're going to do, we're going to take them on singly this time and just show everybody exactly what we can do. Now we're going to have to be watching each other's back during this. We're going to be watching for the Sheik coming in. I'm going to be watching Volkov during Mike's match. But what we're going to do is we're going to show them exactly how it's done in the good old USA.
In the good old USA, Mike Rotundo, Barry Windham, representing this fair country of ours, the Boston Garden, February the 2nd. Stay tuned. We're going to be right back after this.
So I had to own that song. So it was the first album I ever bought with my own money. I think we were on vacation, and I bought it from the Woolworths in Havre, Montana.
Yeah.
Born in the USA cassette. And I just listened to that album. I think it was the only album I owned for at least a year. and I would study the lyrics and, you know, knew all the songs inside out, which is why I love that episode you did covering, you know, all the tracks and No Surrender and Bobby Jean, the deep tracks. And from there, you also no doubt were as excited as I was at Christmas of 1986 when the live box set came up.
Oh, yeah, that was amazing when that thing came out. Yeah, that was the same with me. Like, the first thing I had was Born in the USA, you know, and I knew the kind of radio hits. But then when that box set came out, I was a big fan, and, man, that was amazing, that five-record set, right? All those deep tracks that I'd never heard, and here I am hearing them for the first time, like, you know, performed live with the E Street Band. Really cool, right?
It was, yeah, my parents gave it to me for Christmas. You know, it took me about a year to make my way through, the five LPs and really understand the music, understand the musical influences, the political and historical context and all of those things.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, too, that's where my love of poetry came from. Listening to Springsteen's lyrics, I think in particular the one that really caught my attention was the piano version of Thunder Road.
You know, the good thing about that box set, too, is it came with that cool booklet with all the photos and all the lyrics, too, right?
So you had absolutely.
So you had lyrics right in front of you, about 40, 50 songs, which is amazing. Right?
And I think I never really appreciated the power of language to move, you know, to move a person, to move the emotions and the soul, until I started listening repeatedly to that box set. And in particular, I think maybe that first the first of the five LPs, the one that begins with that Thunder Road, that really got me interested into poetry and literature and all of those things. And my love for Springsteen has never abated. After that, I went back, probably like you, I went backwards. I got Born to Run, Nebraska, The River, Darkness.
Yeah.
You know, completed the library as it was to that point. And I've continued to be a great fan in the 90s. I've went to 10 Springsteen concerts. We went to a lot of the same concerts in Toronto, I believe.
Yeah, I did that one episode where I talked about my Springsteen concert memories, where I just, you know, talked about each show. And you had sent me a message saying, yeah, I was at, like, most of those shows.
The 2003 show where he, in Toronto, that he dedicated to Warren Zevon. That's got to be, I think, the best Springsteen concert I've ever attended.
You know what was amazing about that show was the sound. I remember...
Oh, yeah.
I remember, like, the Skydome was notorious for having, you know, horrible sound for concerts, right? The sound would just, you know, echo all through that big, huge building. And I think, I'm not sure, but I think this might have been actually the first concert with the roof open. You know, not many huge, you know, bands in there playing the full stadium. But Springsteen had the roof open for that. And for some reason, it just kind of seemed to make it sound like just, you know, really good. Amazing.
Seems like I'm caught up in your trap again. Seems like I'll be wearing the same old chain. Oh.
It was an incredible night, and it was later on in the Rising tour, so he was pulling out rarely performed songs.
Yeah.
It was amazing. We were talking about another a tour the other day, and that's the Magic Tour, and the Toronto stop, I think, was probably one of the best in 2007. That was another one of my favorite Springsteen concerts.
Yeah, that was so good. Big fan of that Magic record and the tour. I just think that's one of his best records, you know, since the heyday of the 80s, probably, you know?
Oh, I completely agree. And so in my professional life, I've written some reviews on Springsteen's records, you know, the re-releases of the box sets and so forth. Yeah. And then I started teaching Springsteen a bit when I was teaching English literature, teaching poetry first at Trent University in Peterborough. And as I mentioned more recently, I've taught some of his works at the University of Saskatchewan and at the First Nations University of Canada, and really elicited really strongly positive responses from the students, particularly the First Nations students here in Northern Saskatchewan. Just connected with Springsteen in ways that are absolutely made for some of the best teaching experiences I've ever had.
That's amazing. So when you say First Nations school, is that like Indigenous people only?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Okay, cool. So let's get into this teaching thing. You know, when did you have the idea that you know, I can kind of enhance some of my English literature teaching by using, you know, Springsteen music?
Well, I think it was trying to explain concepts like metaphor, simile, personification, symbol. And initially, it was if I was doing a class on Shakespeare's sonnets, which were written in the 16th century, or John Donne's metaphysical poetry, and this really complex poetry, I play a Springsteen song to sort of illustrate the students, oh, this is how, these are some of the tools that the poet uses. But from there, I realized I could, you know, pull it into a lecture. And, you know, and through trial and error, I've put together a sort of a three-hour lecture on a number of his songs, and incorporated it in different courses that I've been teaching, whether it's the introductory course or a course on poetry. And I just found it's a really great way to introduce some of the key concepts of studying literature, because of course with Bruce you have a guy who is a master storyteller. I mean, he could have been a great short story writer. You have someone who uses the techniques of the poet to maximum effectiveness, and you also have someone, because Shakespeare is my favorite writer, I did all of my grad work on Shakespeare, and you have Springsteen is very Shakespearean in that he creates these wonderful characters.
Have you ever seen a one-trick pony and feel so happy and free? If you've ever seen a one-trick pony, then you've seen me. Have you ever seen a one-legged dog making his way down the street? If you've ever seen a one-legged dog, then you've seen me. Then you've seen me. I come and stand at every door, and you've seen me. I always leave with less than I had before, and you've seen me. But I can make you smile when the blood it hits the floor. Tell me, friend, can you ask for anything more? Tell me, can you ask for anything more? Scarecrow filled with nothing but dust and weeds. If you ever seen that scarecrow, then you've seen me. Have you ever seen a one-eyed man punching at nothing but the breeze? If you ever seen a one-eyed man, then you've seen me. Then you've seen me. I come and stand at every door. Then you've seen me, I always leave with less than I had before. Then you've seen me, but I can make you smile when the blood it hits the floor. Tell me, friend, can you ask for anything more? tell me, can you ask for anything more? These things that have comforted me, I drive away. This place that is my home, I cannot stay. My only faith's in the broken bones and bruises I display. Have you ever seen a one-legged man trying to dance his way free? If you ever seen a one-legged man, then you see me.
I think, you know, there's always comparisons between Dylan and Springsteen. There's one area where I think Springsteen surpasses Bob Dylan, which is with the creation of these lifelike characters that we come to know almost as real people over the course of, you know, a 4 or 5 minute song.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I love how some of his characters kind of, you know, pop up all in different songs, right? Like Jane and Janie shows up a few times, like Mary shows up, you know.
Absolutely, Mary, that's the first person I thought of, right?
Yeah, like Bobby shows up a few times. So you're wondering, are these the same guys, right? And I think, you know, one of the things that's cool about his character songs is they're all seem to be like part of him or part of people that he's grown up with, you know? So it's not like he's just, you know, fictionalizing characters. He's kind of taking, you know, people from his own life and probably, you know, parts of his own personality and, you know, bringing those forward in these character-driven songs.
Well, that's what I you know, could add to that parallel, alternate universe versions of Springsteen. You know, if Bruce hadn't left Freehold, New Jersey, he imagines what his life would be like, and I think that's the character in my hometown, you know?
Yeah, right, yeah.
There's a great quotation from Songs, you know, the book came out around the time of Tracks, and I quote this in all of my lectures on Springsteen. He said that, he's talking about Nebraska, but it could really apply to so many of his albums. He said, I wanted to let the listener hear the characters think, to get inside their heads so you could hear their thoughts and their choices. And I think that's really gets to what Bruce can do with the creation of these, you know, unforgettable, lifelike characters in his songs.
My hometown. Our main streets are whitewashed windows and vacant stores. Seems like there ain't nobody wants to come down here no more. They're closing down the textile mill across the railroad tracks. Foreman says these jobs are going, boys, and then your hometown, to your hometown, to your hometown, to your hometown.
Do you notice a difference between teaching, you know, the First Nation students rather than compared to, you know, the other? Where do you teach? The University of Saskatchewan? Is the other?
Yeah, University of Saskatchewan. I taught for many years at Trent University in Peterborough.
Right.
I think a lot of the First Nations students can strongly identify with a lot of the subject matter, particularly on the album The River and Nebraska, the characters in those songs, the normalcy of their lives is overthrown by economic major shifts in the economy, and I think they can really identify with that. At least that's what I've found in teaching the lectures, and it's some really powerful connection points. I've had students weep when I've taught the river, actually.
Really, eh? Wow.
Yeah.
Like the song itself, The River, is one of you focus
on? The song itself, yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, that's one of the other questions I want to ask you. Like, you know, how have the students, you know, been receptive to the music and, you know, being taught that way? Is that like, I know if I was your in your class, I'd be like, oh, when are we doing the Springsteen class? When are we doing the Springsteen class, right?
Well, it's interesting that everybody does know Bruce Springsteen, whereas I sometimes teach Bob Dylan, and only the older students know Dylan. I sometimes teach Joni Mitchell, who of course is from this area, right. and it's occasionally the case that no one knows Joni Mitchell in the classroom. But everyone does know Springsteen, although in many instances it's their parents or their older siblings' favorite musician. And sometimes there's a barrier with the music. Because, you know, hip-hop is so popular in sort of the millennial generation. Dance music, sort of the techno-folk music and all of that. So the music presents at times the greatest barrier, but the lyrics, once we get into the lyrics, all those barriers collapse, I think, and they find something they can identify with.
Awesome.
And they get drawn into the stories of the characters' lives.
That's excellent. So I'm curious about the actual teaching process. Well, like, how do you do it? Do you play the song and then put the lyrics up on an overhead and kind of dissect it, or do you ask the students to kind of give their interpretation of the lyrics? Like, how do you?
Well, all of the above. We will listen to the songs and I'll give them handouts. I'll refer them to the BruceSpringsteen.com page that has all the lyrics and. What we English professors call explicating. I'll explicate it. I'll go through it line by line and sometimes syllable by syllable. But what's great is once I'm done that, I try to open up the discussion. And, those are where some of the best moments occur when the students, weigh in on, why is it that Born in the USA, the song, was misinterpreted, back in the 80s? Why is it that Hungry Heart has this bouncy, upbeat, high-spirited music matched with dark and cynical lyrics? And I get some amazingly insightful responses to those big questions of Springsteen, about the interpretation of the songs.
Obviously that's the mark of a good songwriter, when you can write a good song kind of be interpreted different ways by different people, just depending on how you look at it.
Well, a great example is the song The River. Does it have a happy ending or a sad ending?
I remember us riding in my brother's car, her body tanned and wet down at the reservoir. At night on those banks I'd lie awake, put her close just to feel each breath she'd take. Those memories come back to haunt me, and they haunt me like a curse. Is a dream alive that don't come true, or is it something worse?
Highway Patrolman is another one. Did Joe Roberts do the right thing in letting his brother Frankie go, or did he do the wrong thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one thing about Springsteen and his writing and the character that's in his song. All the songs are kind of about characters, and a moment in their life, a decision they've made, and now they're looking at that decision in the songs about what's going to happen, and you kind of have to stay tuned to the next record to see what's happening to the characters. I love looking at Springsteen's records compared to where he is in his life, like how you look at Born to Run as this period in his life where he's ready to take the world by the horns, and he's ready to bust out, and it's kind of got this I'm gonna ride free kind of thing. And then you look at Darkness, where he's kind of bringing himself back to reality, and he's like, look, we got some problems we got to work through. It's not all a Born to Run is not really a Forever After kind of song, you know. And then it goes into the river where you get into family and, you know, family ties and love and kind of stuff like that. And Nebraska, which just gets dark. And, you know, Born to USA is just, you know, a pop record and everything seems to be good, even though there's a lot of, melancholy and darkness.
Well, yeah, I think it's about restoring the things that were lost, you know.
Yeah.
We're trying to. I think that's one of the things about Born to USA.
Yeah.
But it's certainly the ongoing story. You're very correct. That's part of what makes Springsteen's music so fascinating and makes each record essential in a way, because it's all part of one ongoing story. And that's one part of something that's always drawn me to Bruce, that yes, he can tell you can get the idealized picture of the world and the hope that is put forth on the Born to Run album. Then you get, to darkness, and particularly the river. The river is about the people who didn't make it out of the hometown, the people who didn't fulfill their dreams and visions, who thought they were born to run, but it turned out they weren't, and that can make for equally powerful songwriting. You got all of it. That's why I compare him to Shakespeare in a lot of ways, because Shakespeare could write magnificent tragedies, but equally brilliant comedies. And you see in Bruce, the river is the best example, but also Born in the USA, tragic comedies.
Mm-hmm. And he is a way to, like, he's a very successful, millionaire, but here he is writing for the common people at a street level and in a way that's not, not insulting, not, what's the word I'm looking for?
Condescending.
Condescending. That's exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly it, Tim. Yeah. So that's an amazing thing. And I was going to say too, if you look at his records, from the last 10, 15 years, like his Millennium Records, like they show kind of a mature, mature point of view to, his life. Like even the last, that song, This Depression off Wrecking Ball is, really,
right.
Really interpersonal, especially after reading, he was actually going through some of that in the Born to Run book. Did you?
Yeah, and I love the point he makes in the book as well about how Ghost of Tom Joad was a song that began the second phase of his career, the most recent phase of his career, where he could still talk about political issues, but he could personalize and talk about himself at the same time, combine the private and the political. And that's, I think he's carried that through, The Rising and Magic and Working on a Dream and Wrecking Ball, all of which I think are magnificent albums. It took you to convince me that Working on a Dream is a magnificent album.
Yeah, I like that record a lot, man. There's some fun things on there, I love Life Itself is really great. I love that song, the sort of melancholy vibe to that, Queen of the Supermarket gets a lot of flack, but I'm a big fan of that song. There's some great things on.
It's for the Queen of the Supermarket. There's a wonderful world where all you desire and everything you've longed for is at your fingertips. Where the bittersweet taste of life is at your lips. Where aisles and aisles of dreams await you, the cool promise of ecstasy fills the air. At the end of each working day, she's waiting there. I'm in love with the Queen of the Supermarket. As the evening sky turns blue, dream awaits in aisle number two. With my shopping cart, I move to the heart of the sea of food so blissfully unaware that there in the presence of something wonderful and rare. Only she moves beneath her white apron, her secrets remain hers. As she bags the groceries, her eyes so bored and sure she's on her. I'm in love with the Queen of the Supermarket.
turn back for a moment and catch a smile that blows this whole fucking place apart.
Well, the melancholy, I think you have to listen to it a few times to really get a sense of that melancholy, but it's there, absolutely, and it really enriches the album. And but you were saying about how, you know, how he speaks, he tells the stories of the common people. That's something I bring up a lot in my lectures, his use of language, and he uses colloquialism, he uses slang, informal expressions. You know, that's one of the defining qualities of his work. And what I always say, you know, is Bruce in response to the question, is Bruce Springsteen a poet? I say yes. And what he does is he makes ordinary language poetic. That's the key to his lyric writing.
That's great. Yeah, one good thing about the English language is there's, you know, there's so many variations with how to say things, right? Like you can, there's slang and, you know, different spellings and just different, you know, just different ways to, you know, say the same thing. And I think, you know, that's an amazing thing when you're writing songs that, like, some other languages might not have. You know, like, if you want to say I love you, there's a thousand ways to say that. And I think he's
absolutely
really great at
absolutely
that,
you know? And he just, you know, as I said earlier, I mean, he uses the tools of the poet and his facility with language, his underrated facility with language, just to maximum efficiency, you know, effectiveness and potency in all of his best work. And it's he's right up there with the best American poets who sort of work in that tradition of using the language of the common people, like Walt Whitman, like Emily Dickinson. Absolutely, I rank him at near or at the very top.
I don't know if you've delved into any of his, like, the box sets or any of the, you know, the, like, the Darkness on the Edge of Town box that comes to mind, where it comes with that kind of replica of his notebook.
I've analyzed that for hours and hours. It's amazing.
So you see how he edits himself, right? You see how he starts with an idea and he'll write a whole page and he'll just grab, like, one line, spit in his face of this Badlands, and that just kind of reoccurs on the next page, and he just kind of, you know, goes on from that. So I think you can really learn a lot about someone's, you know, writing style just by looking at the way they edit themselves, you know.
Well, there's craft in it. You know, he's the craftsmanship in his work is very evident, you know. And I also noticed in the Darkness notebook how there was, you know, there would be a line that he wouldn't use on the Darkness album, but it would turn up on Ghost of Tom Joad.
Yeah. Like, he must have these stacks of notebooks that he can just, you know, I'm stuck on this. And he would just start flipping through his notebooks and just, you know, a line would pop out of them, you know, oh, that'll work kind of thing, you know.
And how he can assemble it to create songs that, you know, more so than most songwriters, have a definite beginning, middle, and end.
Yes, absolutely.
To take you through the full experience.
Awesome. Yeah. So do you think you've turn some students on to Springsteen? Have you made some Springsteen fans, do you think?
Well, that's what they tell me. That's what they tell me. And I know, I think I marked an essay that I really enjoyed recently, which was a comparison between The River, as the song The River, and a sonnet of lost love written by William Shakespeare, and my two favorite writers. So I thought that one was really brilliant.
Sonnet 138. When my love swears that she is made of truth, I do believe her, though I know she lies. That she might think me some untutored youth, unlearned in the world's false subtleties. Thus vainly thinking that she thinks me young, although she knows my days are past the best. Simply, I credit her false-speaking tongue. On both sides, thus is simple truth suppressed. But wherefore says she not she is unjust? And wherefore say not I that I am old? Oh, love's best habit is in seeming trust, and age in love loves not to have years told. Therefore I lie with her, and she with me, and in our faults by lies we flattered be.
Yeah, I think I think I've helped make some Springsteen fans. You know, it's there are some who will never join our fandom, but
sure, yeah.
I think most of my students are at least now more receptive to have a better appreciation of, you know, what he's doing with language, how he's matching the lyrics to the music, and as you were saying, you know, the craft of his art.
Yeah, that's amazing. Like, songwriting as literature. I'm a big Steve Earle fan, and, you know, I've been to his songwriting master class. I'm going again this summer, and that's one of the things he stresses. Like, this is literature. This is literature you can consume while you're driving to work. You know, it's just the same as reading a book, only, like, it's in your, you know, it's, you can consume it in a different way, which I think is amazing. And, you know, Bob Dylan kind of started that school of songwriting. And, as you said, Springsteen is up there as one of the best.
Right. And I think there's another part of his work, too, that is very valuable as an educational tool, and that's Bruce as the historian. You know, he's not just a poet, not just a regular songwriter. He's very much a historian, and I discovered that teaching the song Born in the USA, because most of my students only vaguely knew what the Vietnam War was.
Mm-hmm.
And so that gave me an opportunity to tell them all about, you know, the Battle of Khe Sang, the fact that you know juvenile delinquents back in the day were offered the armed forces rather than jail, the post-war experience for Vietnam veterans. I mean, this is being forgotten and in the present generations, but Bruce's music, you know, so vividly captures the experience of those, you know, people in history and dealing with history. So I very much consider him historian. He provides a very easy way to get in to tackle these big issues of mostly American history, but also sort of world history.
Yeah, very well read. He's doing research when he's writing a song. Like, he's not just, you know, putting pen to paper. He's actually, you know, putting a book up, or I guess these days he's looking online, researching things. And
well, also, I remember in the liner notes to Ghost of Tom Joad, he provides his the articles that he read.
Oh, really?
To write, was it Balboa Park and The New Timer? And The Line, and he points to the books and articles that he researched for that.
There's a bar in Tijuana wherein me and Bobby drink the same people sent back the day before. We met there, she said her name was Lisa. She was from Sonora and just come north. We danced, I held her in my arms. I knew what I would do. Said she had some family in Derrick County. She had a child and a younger brother could just get through. At night they come across the living and the searchlight's dusty glow. We're rushing in our Broncos, forcing back down in the river below. She climbed into my truck. She leaned toward the man we kissed. As we drove, her brother's shirt slipped open, and I saw the tape across his chest. We were just about on the highway when Bobby's Jeep came up in the dust on my right. I pulled over and lit my engine run. I stepped out into it. Felt my gun rest beneath my hand. We just stood there staring at each other. myself through the ocean rain. Bobby Ramirez, he never said nothing. 6 months later, I left the line. I drifted the Central Valley and took what work that I could find. At night, I said to the local bars in the migrant towns, looking for my Louisa with the black hair falling down.
He's a student of history, he's a student of politics, and he's a student of literature.
A student of rock and roll, too.
And a student of rock and roll, absolutely.
That's amazing, Tim. Yeah, I want to take your class. Maybe I'll have to enroll. I'm part Indigenous Canadian, so maybe I can get it.
As am I, yeah.
Maybe I can get in there. Yeah, that's awesome.
Well, I in our previous discussions, I think you were asking me about which songs I do.
Yeah, you have like you said, the river and Born in the USA. What else?
Yeah,
what else
I do six songs. Of course, I'd want to do more if I expand this into a larger class, but I like to go Born to Run and Thunder Road, you know, the beginning of his where he first really found his poetic voice.
Yeah.
Then move on to the period in which he begins to describe the lives of the people that he grew up with and their continuing struggles in the river. Hungry Heart, I've added that one recently, and the students really love Hungry Heart, and I think it's because he uses this simple language, often monosyllabic language, to talk about these very complex ideas. You know, he does it so concisely. That's another thing about Bruce, the economy. You know, he says so much in three verses that a novelist couldn't say, you know, in 800 pages, probably, right? And Hungry Heart's a perfect example of his talent with concision. And then Highway Patrolman, I love that one from Nebraska. That was my dad's favorite song, and it's really a short story. I mean, it has all the elements of a classic short story.
Well, they turned it
and
into
finally,
a movie, right? That song got turned into a movie, right?
That's right, Indian Runner, which Sean Penn directed. And even though the movie isn't as close to being as good as the song.
Yeah, I'm sure, yeah.
It's like I don't know what Sean Penn was thinking when he tried to expand that into 90 minutes, because everything that needed to be there is there in the 5 minutes of Highway Patrolman.
Sure, yeah.
But when it's your brother, sometimes you look the other way. Yeah, me and Frankie laughing and drinking. Nothing feels better than blood on blood. Taking turns dancing with Maria as a band played Night of the Johnstown Flood. I catch him when he streams, like any brother would. Man turns his back on his family, well, he just ain't no good.
And Born in the USA, I like doing that one as well, because as I said earlier, you know, talking about the historical context, talking about the reception in the 1980s, how it was misinterpreted as a patriotic song. Another great song where you have a narrator who isn't Bruce Springsteen. He creates a persona,
right?
You know, and he takes us through the life of this and memories of this character, again, to the point that you feel like this is a person you now know. You know, so those are the six songs that I generally use, but I'd love to, you know, add more. I think one of your favorites, Long Walk Home, I think that's right up there with his best work.
Oh, yeah, great song.
As a work of poetry, Devil's Arcade is another one. Backstreets, Going Back a Ways, that's one of my favorite songs. Of course, time is key. You wouldn't, you know, it'd be hard to do Jungle Land, because that would probably take half an hour to do, and there's only so much time that one person can give over to one particular writer.
Sounds good, man. So if anybody's in Saskatchewan, enroll in Tim's class. You know, you'll get a little Bruce Springsteen module there. Well, that's amazing. Yeah, give me some of your favorites there, Tim. You got a favorite record? You got a favorite Springsteen record?
Well, that's probably a tie between Born to Run and Nebraska.
Yeah.
Again, sort of the two sides of Bruce. I think maybe if there was a favorite track that I could request, it would be maybe that piano version of Thunder Road that's on the live box set from 1986. I think that, you know, it's certainly, I go back to it. It's one I go back to all the time. I was so moved recently listening to that episode on Born in the USA when your colleague was talking about what No Surrender meant to him.
Yeah, that's the one I did with Jesse Jackson. We rated, we put the songs in order.
That's
right.
Right.
Yeah, and he had just gone through a cancer battle, and that was kind of his rallying cry.
Oh, that was such a great episode.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what Bruce is with you in all your struggles in life, I've found, in my experience. And, you know, Thunder Road is a go-to. The piano version of Thunder Road is a go-to song for me.
Screen door slams, very just sweet. Like a vision, she dances across the porch as the radio plays. Roy Orbison singing for the lonely. Hey, that's me and I want you only. Don't turn me home again. I just can't face myself alone. Don't run back inside, darling. You know just what I'm here for. So you're scared and you're thinking that maybe we ain't that young anymore. Well, show a little faith, there's magic in the name. You ain't a beauty, but hey, you're alright. Oh yeah, and that's alright with me. You can hide beneath your covers and study your pain. Make crosses from your lovers, throw roses in the rain. Waste your summer praying in vain for a savior to rise from these streets. Well, now I'm no hero that's understood. All the redemption I can offer, girl, is beneath this dirty hood. With a chance to make it good somehow. Hey, what else can we do now? Except roll down the heaven's waiting down on the tracks. And it's, oh, come take my hand. We're riding out tonight to case the promised land. Oh, 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 Thunder Road. Oh, Thunder Road. It's lying out there like a killer in the sun. Hey, I know it's late, but we can make it. Guitar, and I learned how to make it talk. And my car's out back if you're ready to take that long walk from your front porch to my front seat. The door's open, but the ride it ain't free. I know you're lonely, and there's words that I ain't spoken, but tonight we'll be free. All the promises will be broken. There were ghosts in the eyes of all the boys you sent away. They haunt this dusty beach road and the skeleton frames of burned out Chevrolets. They scream your name at night in the street. Your graduation gown lies in rags at their feet. And in the lonely cool before dawn, from your room you hear their engines roar on. But when you get to the porch, they're gone. On the wind, so Mary, climb in. It's a town full of losers, and I'm pulling out of here to win.
there's so many of them, you know, of the more recent material. I definitely agree with you that Magic is probably his best 21st century album.
Yeah, I love that one. I can't wait to get to an album review on that. Maybe I can call you up and we can talk about that record in depth.
I'd be happy to, join that conversation, absolutely.
Excellent, yeah. So you said you've seen Springsteen about 10 times. You got a standout concert. When was the first time you saw him?
I saw him in 92 in Calgary with the, I guess what has come to be called the other band.
Right, yeah.
And it was an okay concert. I mean, it was the same set list every night, so that kind of diminished some of the spontaneity. But then, you know, it started in the reunion era from 99 onward. I guess I've caught most of the concerts in Toronto, Montreal, Ottawa area.
Right.
And yeah, I guess I'd have to go back to that 2003 concert, the tribute to Warren Zevon at Sky Dome. That would probably be my favorite.
Yeah.
Still hoping to see another East Street Band concert before.
Yeah, I hope so too. I don't know, maybe 2019 we'll get one maybe, I hope. I don't know. You know what I would love to see? I'm crossing my fingers. I would just love to see Bruce play with a smaller band, like a 4 or 5-piece band. You know, like a...
Well, I guess they had originally intended the Devils and Dust tour to be something along those lines. He was going to bring along Nels Lofgren and Danny Federici, I think, and then he just ultimately decided to do it solo, more or less solo acoustic. But no, right. I'd love that idea.
Yeah,
I'd love to see the stripped-down version.
You either see Springsteen like solo acoustic, or you see him with like 15 people on stage, which is just fucking too much for me, right? So, you know, I would love to see him play with just, you know, a guitar, bass, drums kind of thing, like a rockabilly outfit, or even just, you know, guitar, bass, piano, another guitar, like, you know, Max, Gary, Stephen, Roy, something like that. That would be amazing, you know?
That would be great.
Just to hear how he would interpret some of his songs with just a stripped-down band like that would be cool, you know?
I'm still looking forward to that country album that apparently has been waiting to be released for several years now.
Is that what they're saying? It's like his solo record, but they're saying it's kind of got a country?
It got a country. I think he referred to, he had said he was influenced by Glen Campbell and Jimmy Webb and their late 60s work. So
yeah.
I guess sort of a pop country. You know, Mitch is sort of what he already did on some of the tracks on Tunnel of Love, really. But
yeah. Well, apparently he's had that record recorded for a few years, but I guess maybe the political climate is a little different for when he wanted to release that or something like that. So who knows what's going to happen with that, you know? You know, any hopes or wishes for Springsteen in the future, you know, in new music, live tours, re-releases? I love the deluxe versions of stuff, you know, the box sets.
Oh, yeah, and I mean, they need to do a Nebraska box set, hopefully one that includes the additional songs, you know, which we've heard about for years, like Child Bride and the acoustic Downbound Train. I'm looking forward to a Born in the USA box set.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, I'm really loving the Live Archive series. That's become one of my favorite things.
Yeah, you were mentioning about that they put out like one show kind of a month, an archival
Absolutely,
show,
the first Friday of each month, and it's... sometimes the highlight of my month, you know, what that show is going to be. And, you know, I'm hoping they dig deep in the vaults and get some of the stuff from, you know, the mid-70s, the Born to Run from the Born to... They've done, I think, one Born to Run show so far, the Tower Theater, but there's the Roxy, which I believe was recorded on multi-track. So, you know, I'm just hoping they get more of that material out because, yeah, the Live Archive series has been absolutely one of my favorite things in Springsteen fandom in the last decade or so.
Yeah, they're really good. I did an episode all about that where I kind of just you know, played a couple of clips from each of the Live Archive series that I've purchased. I don't got them all, but I've got about 10 of them, I think.
Well, there's one that's really underrated that I'd like to recommend. 2009 Philadelphia Spectrum. It was the Working on a Dream tour,
right.
And it was the last show in the Spectrum, and they played the Born in the USA album from start to finish. That's got to be one of the greatest Springsteen concerts I've ever heard.
Excellent. I'll have to check that out for sure. I love the St. Louis 2008, I think, Magic Tour. I think that was, that's a hot show. I especially love the encore of Little Queenie, which I played that on my Chuck Berry episode, but there's, you know, I think it's like the last song, and you seem like they want to go home, but Springsteen's like, yeah, we got to play one more. And, you know, it's an
Who is the King of St. Louis? Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So, and there's an extended part, I think, on the outro where he just keeps the riff going, which is amazing. So, yeah, high recommend on that one. I think there's one that came out from 77, like in between, you know, the Born to Run in Darkness records.
The Lawsuit Tour.
Yeah, yeah, there's a great show from that.
Yeah, I think the first version of Something in Into the Night, like an early version of it.
Yeah, yeah. There's a good one that came out from the last tour, the three nights in New Jersey, I think. They had a deal where you could buy like all three shows for $30, I think. So, and it works.
And I haven't listened to that one yet.
No, and I think each show is almost 4 hours long. So it's like you get 12 hours of music, which is just insane. You know.
And I think he did Greetings from Asbury Park on those shows, or it's a large portion of
a large port. Yeah, he did a, like a set of like five or six songs, I think, from it, which was amazing. Yeah, so, you know, there's always more to come from Springsteen, and there's always just a wealth of material in that catalog, back catalog, that you can just, you know, get into, which is amazing. All right, well, thanks for talking, Tim. Anything else? You got anything you want to plug? You got any contact information or
Well, I'm continuing to do some work on Springsteen scholarship, trying to figure out the connections between Springsteen and Dylan. So I think I'm going to work on an article on that for this summer, now that school has ended.
Yeah.
So that's something that's really interested me, you know, how he was influenced by Dylan, but then he escaped the influence of Dylan, you know, in the mid to late 70s. And that's something I'm working on, and I'll probably seek some of your thoughts on that as I do my research.
Absolutely.
And just gonna keep on making Springsteen part of my life, I guess, and part of my professional career, which doesn't get much better than that.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. That's so cool that you can, you know, weave his music into your teaching there and turn some kids on to some Springsteen.
All right, thank you, Lee, and thanks for the great podcast. I'm gonna get caught up on the Rolling Stones episodes. I'm really looking forward to listening to them.
Excellent, man.
So, that's the show, folks. Thanks for listening. You can find us on our website at trampslikeuspod.com, communicate with us on Facebook at our Tramps Like Us podcast group page, and on Twitter at @TrampsLikeUsPod. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on iTunes, where you can leave a review and a 5-star rating. Tramps Like Us podcast is a nonprofit audio fanzine created by fans for fans and is available for free. We are not affiliated with Bruce Springsteen or Columbia Sony Records. If you've heard any music you like, please find it and purchase it from brucespringsteen.net, iTunes, Amazon, your local record store, or wherever music is sold. As always, gratitude and respect to Bruce Springsteen and all past and current members of the heart-stopping, pants-dropping, hard-rocking, booty-shaking, earthquaking, love-making, Viagra-taking, history-making, testifying, death-defying, legendary E Street Band.
Hey, you guys got everything you need?
Oh, yeah, we got it.
Hey, what's with the used books?
What's wrong with used books?
They've already been read.
Yeah, and they've already been underlined, too. Get it?
That's the problem. The last guy who underlined them, he could have been a maniac. Hey, get these guys some new books. Get some new books, will you? I'll tell you what, charge it to me, too. Okay, here, pick a card. And I'll tell you, I'm taking 4 of those school sweaters, a bunch of pennants, some of those beer mugs, a few of these fuzzballs you cheer with, and... Hey, folks, it's on me. Shakespeare for everyone, okay? Yeah. You too, honey. Ooh, I'd like to tame your shrew.